65,498 square miles. We've got a lot to cover, so let's get to it. This is Spanning the State, and here are your hosts, Kristen Bry and Brian Noonan.
Good afternoon.
Hi, Kristen.
It's an attack plan, not a war plan.
That's right. Listen, this is bizarre. Welcome to Bizarro World. Up is down, left is right, black is white. Attack is not the same as war. So please, let's get it right. Why do you continue to make such a big deal out of a simple glitch? It's a glitch. We all have them.
Hi. And that's actually not really what we're going to be talking about today, but a little bit, because if you want to preview what we're talking about at 2:30 with our guest, it's a little bit about gaslighting, normalizing.
It's about hypernormalization. We're going to talk to Dr. Joe Pierre. He is a psychiatrist, an author. He is an expert when it comes to misinformation, disinformation, and false beliefs, the psychology behind false beliefs. So you may find similarities between our conversation and what used to be real life and now is just life. So yes, at 2:35, this is going to be very interesting
I'm very much looking forward to that conversation. But then also, we have some returning guests, and I'm very excited about this. So one of my favorite interviews we did last year, the show, I think we did it in May, so the show was still pretty new.
Right.
But we interviewed two of the women who were part of the Wisconsin 14, or that was what the group was called. And it was a 3-day solution workshop between 14 different Wisconsinites who all different backgrounds, all different opinions on abortion, and they in a room for 3 days to try to come up with solutions that they could all agree on as far as policy when it comes to women's health.
Right.
And we had two of the women on opposite sides of the issue on the show talk about the experience, and it was great. It's through this organization called Builders, which is trying to tackle toxic polarization. Well, the two women are back together now, and I think they stayed friends, but they have organized on a very different controversial issue, gun control and gun violence.
Okay.
So coming up this Sunday on Madison, they are doing a screening of a documentary of about gun violence. There's also going to be a panel. So they're going to join us at 1:35 to talk about what they've learned and how they're applying it to a different topic and what they're hoping to get out of this event on Sunday. But first, so as of right now, total spending on the Wisconsin Supreme Court race has reached more than $81 million.
That seems reasonable, he said sarcastically.
Just for reference, in 2023, at that point, that was a record-breaking race. That was $56 million. So this is quite a bit more already.
Wow.
And it's both sides. So it's Democratic-backed Dane County Circuit Court Judge Susan Crawford has raised more than $25 million for the race to date, including $5.5 million from the state Democratic Party. Her supporters, as we've talked about before, George Soros, Governor J.B. Pritzker
from Illinois,
Schimmel has raised more than $12 million, which includes more than $6 million from the Wisconsin Republican Party. But it's really the outside groups that have made up the difference more than what the campaigns themselves are spending. So $32 million-ish have been spent by the campaigns.
Okay.
$49 million-ish is what the outside groups have spent so far. So my question is, why? Like, just getting to the bottom, and I think I know a little bit because we follow it.
Right.
But it's like, in a statewide court race, why are people who do not live here, who have no intention on living here, spending this much money? So when we come back, we're going to talk to a D.C. political strategist about that. What are the national implications? Why is there so much investment and interest in this? So stay with us on Spanning the State.
We're back. It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And with 6 days left for the spring election, but more specifically the Wisconsin Supreme Court election, the race has reached more than $81 million spent. $32 million of that has been spent by the candidates in the campaign, but approximately $49 million has been spent so far by outside groups. So we all know that outside billionaires are typically somewhat are sometimes a lot involved in Wisconsin's elections.
Yeah.
We all know that we have margin-thin elections. But what specifically about this race has out-of-state billionaires investing so much? Here to talk through the national implications is Pat Dennis, who is the president of American Bridge 21st Century and a leading expert in opposition research and political strategies. Welcome to the show, Pat.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So I guess just out of the gate, like, I feel like we have a handle of what this means for Wisconsin and what's on the line. The 1849 abortion ban, collective bargaining rights for public employees, our election laws. But why is there so much investment from people who do not live here?
Yeah, and I just want to say, as somebody who's been in politics and watched these kind of elections for a long time, this is extraordinarily unusual. I mean, I remember when for a major marquee Senate race, right, $80 million was seen as impossible. And to see this in essentially an off-year, non-November election is extremely unusual. Now, I think it's extremely important. It's difficult to overstate how important this election actually is. And that's both to folks in Wisconsin. I think that's the main angle. But I think what you see is somebody like Elon Musk, who believes basically that public opinion doesn't matter, right? You see a lot of the stuff he's doing, it polls very poorly with the public, you know, going after Social Security, the stuff they're doing with healthcare, cutting cancer research, you know, shutting down the Department of Education. Those are very unpopular. And the thesis on how you backstop that unpopularity is, can the richest man in the world just buy some support, get you out of that electoral backlash. And this has kind of become the test case for that. So, I mean, it's sad. This is where our country is right now. It's kind of, you know, it's a bad place for us to be as a nation, but it's where we are. And we've got to fight on this turf.
Now, Pat, even though you said this is unprecedented, this amount of money, you've watched white races all over the country. Does this kind of spending work? I mean, if for Schimmel's campaign with all this cash going out, and even for Crawford's, is it the person who spends the most wins?
I mean, it's funny, right? To some extent, this is the question we are answering. This is the test that Elon Musk is putting Wisconsin under, is does it work? Historically, you can say a few things. Generally speaking, the utility of money diminishes when it's closer on both sides. You know, if one side has, you know, $40 million and the other side has $10 million, then generally, yeah, that will work. If it's more or less evenly matched within a few million dollars, the tendency is that the more you spend, the more the returns diminish. You start bidding against yourself for ad space. You start, you know, voters start tuning out because they see so many ads, and the impact kind of diminishes as you get up to these super big money amounts. And, you know, for somebody like Elon Musk, that could be a problem.
So that's actually, because we've had this discussion before, because I came out of our 2023 election, which was the last time we broke records, with a kind of the cynical view, because we had such record high turnout for an off-year spring election, that unfortunately money does drive higher turnout. Have you seen more data as far as whether or not that's true?
It raises awareness. I mean, look, you all are talking about this race. Like, it does raise awareness. The thing is, it kind of raises awareness on both sides. And Wisconsin is an extraordinarily evenly split state. Mm-hmm. It's a very moderate state. There's a reason it's a battleground in the presidential. So to a certain extent, you can increase turnout on both sides by having more or less, you know, by going in and matching tit for tat as Elon comes in and does the spending. So, you know, it's kind of an open question. You know, does that drive winning? And the one other thing I'll say is you can't spend your way out of a bad candidate.
Ha, yeah.
Well, find out. You mentioned the voters kind of tuning out at a certain point, so diminishing returns. Does that depend on not only how much money, but what that money is being spent on? You know, it seems like every commercial here is they're negative. It's never talking about one of the candidates. It's always talking about how horrible the other candidate is. Does that drive those diminishing returns as well?
Partially. And you also see that kind of spending generally being associated with lower turnout. So you have kind of these two forces working against each other, the increased attention driving additional turnout, with the increased negative advertising kind of pulling against that. And that kind of can put you in a situation where, you know, both sides are pulling against each other. And the hope is, and honestly, my earnest hope, is by not allowing ourselves to be outspent here, like, you know, staying in the fight in terms of money, because we can't be just totally outgunned here. By going essentially tit for tat, we can basically put it back into a situation where voters are just determining what they think is best. And honestly, we could get there a lot more cheaply if we didn't have out-of-state billionaires starting this off like Elon.
If we had some campaign finance reform?
Well.
Yeah.
If only. I'm going to start making a list of things I want less than I want campaign finance reform. But so one of the things both Speaker Hakeem Jeffries said this week and Elon Musk said on his X live chat with Schimmel and Ron Johnson, I think that was over the weekend, they both referenced the congressional maps being a main driver. Mm. So that, I think, is probably the issue that has the most potential national implications, that if the congressional maps in Wisconsin were challenged again and the maps changed like it did with our legislative maps, it could change the makeup of Congress. But here's the thing that I'm a little confused on, and I don't know if you have more information on this, Pat, but it's like the current liberal-leaning Supreme Court rejected the case. They rejected the challenge last year to look at the congressional maps. And so what makes people think that there's going to be another challenge filed before 2026 that this new court makeup will hear?
Yeah, and this is interesting, right? Because I don't necessarily agree with that analysis. To me, this is an election about making sure that we have, and this is almost a cliche, I almost hate to say it, but it's true and I believe it. It's about whether or not you're going to have judges that call balls and strikes, judges who essentially make rulings that people like me, people who are partisans, disagree with, or are you going to have folks who really enforce loyalty, who can have their loyalty bought? I think you see this a lot. Like, there is a real desire to have pure loyalty from the judiciary on the side of the Republican Party right now. You see it nationally. They are threatening to impeach judges who rule against the administration. They're talking about censuring judges. They're talking about, you know, trying to essentially bring the judicial branch to heel. Like, that is the question to me. It's like, I'm almost, to a certain extent, I would be much happier to have somebody in there who's willing to rule against things that I think are good based on the law, based on, you know, the way, you know, the legislature and electoral history has worked there, as opposed to just pure partisan loyalty, which I believe is really a big part of what the Republicans nationally are pushing for.
Hmm. Okay, so for each of the next 4 years, Wisconsin is going to have a state Supreme Court race, a position that is supposed to be non-political. Again, add that to your list of things you would like changed. It is not. It is not anymore. Is there any way to go back to normal, for lack of a better term, the, you know, previous to all this money and all of this outside influence?
I mean, it's difficult, right? It's hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And you look at Wisconsin, has really, it is a swing state, and it has borne the brunt of a lot of this national attention for years, going back to, you know, Scott Walker, Act 10. A lot of these issues really happen in Wisconsin because it's such an important state. It's so split down the middle. And, you know, also the timing of this race, you know, generally being right after a major election, also impacts that. So I think we will see some level of normalization. And to me, if Musk loses this one and starts to think, all right, you know, it was a waste of money, I thought I could buy myself out of electoral backlash and I couldn't, then I think we might start to see a cooling on this kind of thing.
That's what it's interesting to me, as far as, because I think people have made assumptions over what his and why his involvement is, because obviously there's a court case going on.
Yes.
But I also just think with the threat, the looming threat of him, Elon Musk's ability to loom over Republican lawmakers and say, I'm going to back a primary opponent against you, but just to be able to swing, put his finger on any election going forward. And this is kind of the first testing ground for that, right?
Exactly. It's a question of, how much power does he really have? How much is it bark? How much is it bite? And look, being the richest man in the world does legitimately give you a lot of power, but it doesn't mean you can buy a vote whenever you need to.
Let's hope not. Let's hope people vote for better reasons than that. So that's my hope, at least.
Boy, your list is getting longer and longer by
second. I know. I'm a very needy person.
As you've watched across the country these kinds of races, are there Are there places that are more susceptible to this kind of money and this kind of influence? I know you said, it drives turnout and all that. But have you noticed, like, one region of the country, boy, they really buy into this. They love when people spend money.
Well, I'll tell you, not Wisconsin. I mean, folks in Wisconsin have been, blanketed by television ads for so long. And you see this with states that are kind of the cores of electoral, stuff. You saw it with Iowa and New Hampshire when they were the head of the presidential primary. The voters become quite sophisticated quite quickly. Yeah. And Wisconsin's had over a decade, essentially, of that same thing. So, it's definitely not Wisconsin. And generally speaking, maybe this isn't popular in my profession, I have a very high opinion of the voters. I think generally speaking, they make good decisions based on the information they have.
Pat called us sophisticated.
Wow.
All right, Pat Dennis.
Pat, lay down. I think you have a fever.
He is the president of American Bridge 21st Century. Thank you so much for spending time with us today.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for having me.
All right, we'll be back with more after this.
It is Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry.
So that was
I'm going to Thanalysis.
Are you really?
Yeah, I'm taking my dad.
That'll be fun. Yeah. I know last year it was a huge success.
I know. I'm so very, very excited to see what is in store this year. I think my dad's really excited.
I was going to ask, how's dad feeling about it? Good?
Good.
He wants to go?
Yeah. I mean, he's recovering from that Badger loss over the weekend. It was not the birthday present that he wanted.
Now, will he stop at the tables as he wanders
so.
Through? Okay.
Like him and Mike both. I think my dad's a blackjack guy.
Okay.
So we'll see.
A few dollars here and there. Yeah, let me know.
All right. ABC News and local headlines are next.
Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I am Kristen Bry. And it's crazy to think that we've been doing this for...
I know.
When's your anniversary?
By now, officially, I was made full-time on the 15th of April. Right. But I had started before that. Yeah. They just hadn't signed the papers.
Years before that. About a year ago, last May, we had a chance to interview two of the women who were part of, quote, the Wisconsin 14, which was a group that took part in a three-day solution session that was coordinated by the nonprofit Builders, which is, I think they've changed their names now, but I think it starts with us, now they're called Builders, and it's basically an organization that is trying to fight toxic polarization.
Good
which
luck.
Is, yeah, right? So in this group in Wisconsin, they brought 14 different people from across Wisconsin together, from very different backgrounds, very different opinions on abortion, put them in a room together and had them try to come up with policy solutions that they could all agree on.
Yes,
was the key, that they could only things that they could find consensus on were then set to get public feedback and I think trying to advocate for at the state level.
Right.
So we talked to Ali Mildrow, who is the Board of Education Treasurer for Madison Metropolitan Schools and the Executive Director at Women's Medical Fund Wisconsin, and Bria Halama. And Bria is a clinical mental health counselor. She's in Milwaukee. And so they're both members of the Builders movement. And so when we talked to them, it was mostly about abortion. But now the two have organized an event that's happening this Sunday in Madison talking about another issue that is very hard to get consensus on, gun control.
Yes. And this is based on the group that was in Tennessee.
It was in Tennessee. So there was a documentary made on the group that came together in Tennessee to talk about gun control solutions that they could all find consensus on. They made a documentary. And so this Sunday, they're going to air the documentary and then have a panel. So when we come back, we're going to talk to Ali and Bria again. Both on their relationship as it has evolved since that first meeting, what made them want to organize this event, and also what they're hoping to get out of it, and if they invited any lawmakers, because I think that would be interesting to see if anyone is going to go to that. So we're going to have that conversation after this.
We're back. It's Spanning the State. I'm Brian Noonan.
And I'm Kristen Bry. And on Sunday, March 30th, at Madison's Overture Center, Wisconsin citizens from across the ideological spectrum are invited to a film screening and a multi-partisan panel discussion that's going to explore the hidden common ground on the prevention of gun violence in schools and the community. Obviously, this is about 3 months since the shooting that happened in December. Seems like enough time has passed to maybe talk about it, especially in a nonpartisan a way that is actually trying to find solutions. So two of the women organizing the event were no strangers to hard conversations over controversial issues. Ali Moudreau and Bria Halama were part of a group of 14 Wisconsinites who sat in a room for 3 days to come up with policy solutions on abortion. Now, I think we have Bria and actually Tori Larned, who is a communication lead at Builders, which is the organization behind all of this. And they're joining us now. Welcome to the show, ladies.
Hi, thanks for having us on.
So I guess...
Hey, Kristen, it's great to be here.
Hi. So, Bria, I guess, give us a little bit of a rundown of what's happening on Sunday for this event. What's the documentary, and who are the panelists?
Yeah, great question. So I actually can't take any credit for doing any of the organizing. That was all Ali. She's amazing, and she just saw a need for this event to happen. So she's been doing all of that. They just invited me in to help with moderating
it.
So... Yeah, so I do know the details. We're hosting this event that's going to then have, at the start of it, the preview of the film that they did for the Tennessee 11 event that they did to try to find common solutions and common ground on the issue of gun violence and things like that. And so then we're going to have this panel introduce themselves, kind of have some questions and answers for them, and then have audience participation as well.
Now, Bria, welcome back, first of all. We're glad you're here. So when we talked to you last year, you and Ali had met at this the Builders event on women's health and abortion, and you talked to us both you seemed very friendly at that point. It seems to have moved on. What made you two decide that you needed to organize an event like this?
Yeah, again, I would have to, that would be Ali that, yeah, that's okay. I mean, I decided I wanted to join because I think Ali's just amazing and we've developed a friendship even after our event ended. And so she asked if I would come on and help her, and I wanted to because I thought it was an important issue, and just because of my friendship with her, I wanted to join her in on it.
So Tori, can you remind us what the Tennessee 11, what policy solutions they did find and that they were promoting that they came to consensus on?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having us on. So the Tennessee 11 is a group of citizens across the state of Tennessee who have vastly different beliefs on the issue of gun rights and safety. They came together for a three-day solution session to try to see if they could find common ground across the differences on this issue. And I don't mean to give any spoilers, and it's still going to be a wonderful film to watch this experience, but they do. They find 8 solutions together, ranging from gun safety education in schools to a proposal to temporarily remove firearms from people at risk of harming themselves or others. Now, they took these proposals and uploaded them online for the public to weigh in on them, and 30,000 Tennesseans weighed in and supported 5 of those. They took those proposals to the legislature and have passed 1 into law. So the film really shows you the journey from starting a conversation with strangers and how it can lead to solutions.
That's great.
I have to ask, are
lawmakers invited to Sunday? Is there any expectation that any of them will be there?
Yes, we have had elected officials who say they're going to be there, and people from the gun rights community and the gun safety community who are going to be there, in addition to nearly 100 citizens across the city and state who say that they want to come and be a part of this conversation. I'm going to hold back on announcing their names in case show up and see who's there, right? But we're excited to have a diverse audience in the room, diverse stakeholders in the room. And most importantly, the people on this panel come from a diversity of backgrounds. We have Steve DeRozio, who's the founder and president of a gun shop and range in Wisconsin, but he is also a firearm safety instructor. Yes, he sells guns, but he also believes that it's important to have education behind the firearm that you own. To also Stephen Alacaro, who's a nationally recognized entrepreneur who spent more than a decade bridging divides, especially on the issue of guns. And more. So we're excited for so many thoughtful people to come to the table and have this conversation and show us that there's a more constructive path forward than what, you know, our current lawmakers or this politicized environment make us feel.
Tori, you gave us a little background on what happened with the Tennessee 11. Has there been any movement on the Wisconsin 14 and the discussions they had and the policy recommendations they brought forward?
You know, there has been a lot of movement, and I think I'd love to hear from Bria because she's been involved in that, this legislative session. Her and the Wisconsin 14 have, before the legislative session, they spent time telling this story, right? There's a lot of this work that happens behind the scenes, a lot of problem solvers, but they don't often get the attention, except for Kristen and you have always given us, have given voice to those people, right? So I appreciate y'all, and I know the group appreciates y'all. So they've been storytelling and showing that problem solving does exist. And then this legislative session, they've taken a bit more action behind some of their proposals. And so, Bria, I don't know if you want to speak to that one. I know the one that they're focused on is the extension of postpartum Medicaid from 60 mm-hmm. days to a year. And some of them were at the Capitol last week taking action on some of that. And I know Bria is really passionate about that experience. So, Bria, do you have more to add there?
Yeah, unfortunately, I feel like I'm like, oh, gosh, I can't be helpful there either. I am not a big policy person. I think where I more so have had such valuable experiences in this whole experiment has been just in like the relationships. I'm much more of like, who's the person in front of me? How can I connect with them? How can I relate to them? Some of those bigger policy things I haven't been as involved in because it's just not my wheelhouse. It's not where I feel like I have gifts necessarily, but I'm definitely a big supporter of it. And I've loved the relationships that I've gotten to build. And I want to see some of those policies go through and to make some change for sure.
Well, I'm excited to see what this weekend could lead to other policies when it comes to gun violence in our state. So if people are interested in attending, where can they get more information about Sunday's event?
Yeah, that would be great. So anyone who is interested in attending, it is a free event to the public. We want anyone, whether you're a gun owner or you're a family with children and you're worried about safety or you know, anywhere in between on this spectrum to come to this conversation, it's welcome to everyone. Just go to builderswi.eventbrite.com just to grab your seat since space is limited at the Overture Center. Again, though, it's at 1 p.m. on Sunday, and we're excited to have the community out there.
Well, great. Well, Bria Halama is a clinical mental health counselor based here in Milwaukee and part of the Builders Movement. And Tony Larned is a communications lead at Builders. Thanks so much for your time today, ladies.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you both so much.
All right. We'll be back with more after this. Welcome back to Spanning the State. I'm Kristen Bry.
I'm Brian Noonan. On the other side of the news, of course, we will spin the state. This is going to be interesting, the event on Sunday. And I'm sorry that Ali couldn't be with us because I wanted to talk to her and Bria about how this friendship has developed over time mm-hmm. because they were strangers when they went in to the Wisconsin 14 experiment,
yeah.
and now they seem to be, working together even more on different projects.
Well, it's similar to Institute for Reforming Government. Mm-hmm. Were you here for when we had the two gentlemen? Because they did a similar conversation yeah. after the election. I think they brought eight people together.
Okay.
All Wisconsinites, different parts of the state. And it might have been the week you were out for Christmas, and we had two of the participants come in and talk about it. And I'm just a big fan of that. I'm a big fan of trying to get people in the same room because people are less likely to be terrible or as dug in when you were face to face with someone. And I actually, maybe we'll play some of this on Friday, but I got a chance last week to interview former UN Ambassador Linda Thomas Greenfield.
Oh.
And one of my questions was, she has this She calls it gumbo diplomacy. But okay. I think there's a lot of people have that idea that by sharing a meal, sharing yes. part of your humanity with one another as you're talking about controversial topics or your adversaries, right. and you're trying to negotiate diplomacy and stuff like that. But to be in a situation where you humanize one another mm-hmm. is very important to a productive conversation.
Well, because that's why you can't have a debate on social media or over
yeah,
text, because there's nothing there that ties you to that other person.
Even know if they're a real person or not.
Right. You don't know if they're a real person.
This is definitely an avatar. This is not a real picture of a real person.
Right. And you know my philosophy of some people need a punch in the face. You can't. That is taken away if you're actually talking
yeah.
to a person face to face. And you don't have to. Sometimes there are no winners and losers. You don't always change. Most of the time, you're not going to change that person's mind, but they may have a point that you agree with to a certain extent and vice versa.
But I think what you do, because in both of these cases, then we'll go to the news, whether it was the Tennessee 11 talking about gun control and gun violence, the Wisconsin 14 talking about abortion and access, neither of them came up with solutions of how, like, when to cut off the access
exactly.
to abortion or, like, banning guns. It was more nuanced policy solutions yes. that help get to the bigger issue and that you can find common ground on versus, like, instead of just the, like, full issue, right or wrong, morality,
right.
et cetera. So, all right. Well, we will take a break. And when we come back, we will spin around the state on Spanning the State.